Sai Ram, dear listeners, welcome to this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth, where listeners send questions on practical spirituality or queries and confusions relating to Swami's message and we answer them for you. I'm Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai, and we at Prashanthi Nilayam are still on a high after Swami's birthday celebrations. And I'm sure this energy will keep us fresh and motivated for one full year at least. For those of you who were not here for the past couple of days, it would be quite difficult to comprehend the crowds that we saw. This is a time in India where there is a sort of an economic crunch and people are hesitant to travel much. The crowd we saw in the past 2 days gave us no hint of anything like that. And there was that familiar sense of fulfillment and jubilation that is so characteristic of Swami's birthday celebrations. Swami would often say that there was no need for him to celebrate his birthday, but he would do it only because it gave us ananda or bliss. And the very purpose of God, the purpose God comes in a human form, is to give ananda to all. And it is that pure joy that we felt when we celebrated Swami's birthday that reflects off Swami. And he would look as excited as a mother whose children have come home for vacation, if I could use that comparison. But let me hold my reins here, dear listeners, for this is Radio Sai Answering Booth, and we have questions to answer. Yes, two questions as always. But before we get to the questions, let me read out for you the quote of the day. These are words of Robert Kennedy, the brother of the 35th President of America, John F. Kennedy. And I quote, "Each time a man stands up for an ideal or acts to improve the lot of others or strikes out against injustice, he sends forth a tiny ripple of hope. And crossing each other from a million different centers of energy and daring, those ripples build a current that can sweep down the mightiest walls of oppression and resistance." End of quote. Swami would often say that the primary quality needed to attain success in anything, be it worldly or spiritual, is self-confidence. And not confidence in this ego self, but in the true self, especially when it comes to achieving something noble. And a beautiful analogy that Swami uses is that God is the ocean, and we are but waves of that very ocean, living a limited existence individually, but no different in reality from the ocean itself. And have you ever stood in a beach and watched the waves lashing on the shore? When we look into the distance, all that we see is a small ripple in the surface of the water. But even as we are watching it, it grows and grows and becomes a big wave. Even a huge wave starts as a small ripple. When Swami says that we have in us the same divinity that animates and sustains this entire cosmos, why is it that when we want to be the change, we hesitate and wonder, what can I as an individual do? Every small initiative does not necessarily become a revolution, but let us remember that every revolution starts off as a small initiative of an individual or a small group. And it is very difficult to know if we are really going to be the agents of change, but that doubt should not stop us from being a source of the initiative. If Swami wants, let what we do become a wave. But our duty is to keep sending out ripples of hope, goodness, and transformation. When our intentions are pure, it then becomes Swami's duty to add to our energy, and we will see that similar such ripples will form from across the board, beyond distinctions, and the wave formed this way will become unstoppable. That is why Swami would say, "I want people who will stand up for the ideals, who are absolutely selfless." Because evil does not fear power. Evil always fears selflessness. So before moving ahead, let me read that beautiful quote from Robert Kennedy once again. "Each time a man stands up for an ideal, or acts to improve the lot of others, or strikes out against injustice, he sends forth a tiny ripple of hope, and crossing each other from a million different centers of energy and daring, those ripples build a current that can sweep down the mightiest walls of oppression and resistance." All right, then let's head to the questions then. The first question is from Sister Purna Janakiraman from Sharjah. It's a very important question, and I'm sure most of you listeners will be able to relate to this question. She's also been very kind enough to send it in her own voice. So let us first listen to her question, and then we will go to the answer.
Sai Ram, Swami says that we should always live in the present, but the mind does not forget the past so easily, especially the unpleasant things. How can we forget the past if we have to move with the same person with whom we have had a tough time in the past? And also the past events and our preconceived thoughts about them always occupies our mind, and we tend to fear that person or avoid that person. So how can we start the relationship again with open mind? Please suggest some ways.
Another question I have is, when we are sure what is right and when we tell the person involved, and if they don't listen or agree with us, what should we do? Should we leave them thinking it is their destiny? It is very difficult because of our love for them. Thank you.
Thank you for that question, sister. I'll start by addressing two parts of that question first. One is forgetting the unpleasant past, and the other is forgetting the unpleasantness from the past in a relationship. These two are a little different, but they are also similar in a way. Unpleasant events could be caused by someone, or we ourselves could be the cause of them, or they could have been just events which happened. I wish to first talk about unpleasant events of the past which were caused by others. You know, when we believe that it has been caused by someone, then what comes into picture is how to forgive them. Same is the case with unpleasant relationships. If we have to move on or start afresh, what we need to do is forgive that person, right? So why is it so difficult for us to forgive a person, and how can we forgive people? You know, most of us think this way. When someone has behaved unfairly with us or hurt us in a way, and we forgive them, we are doing a favor to that person. We think, even though he or she has done wrong, out of my magnanimity, I am forgiving that person. When we have that attitude, we tend to think, does that person really deserve this favor of mine? Deserve this forgiveness of mine? See, there is a fundamental mistake in that. It is very important to realize that the first beneficiary of forgiveness is the person who forgives. When I forgive someone who has wronged me, it makes my heart light. I free myself. When I understand and believe this concept, I will not ask, does that person deserve this forgiveness or not? I will ask, do I need this forgiveness? And the answer is yes, of course. Why should I suffer because someone else has done something wrong? Imagine you're walking on the road and a car drives past you in a maddening speed, and it splashes slush all over you. You're so wild with that person driving the car. Will you say, I'm so angry with that person, I will not go and wash myself? Why would you punish yourself for someone else's mistake? So first and foremost, we must understand that when we choose to forgive someone, we are doing ourselves a favor. And it is pointless to hurt ourselves because we are upset with someone else's action, right? Having said that, if we are in a position where our duty is to dispense justice or to make the person doing the fault acknowledge and learn from the mistake, we must play our role. Say if we are a parent or a teacher or even a judge for that matter. But even these roles can be played after forgiving a person. Once we forgive, we can be just without being vengeful. In spirituality, forgiveness plays a very, very important role. And all those who wish to take to the spiritual path should keep this in mind. The measure of a person's ability to forgive or let go of the past unpleasantness is directly proportional to one's spiritual progress. And each of us can ourselves observe this change happening in us. If your ability to forgive has not increased over the years, it is a clear indication that you are missing something in the path of spirituality. Why is forgiveness so important? I think if I explain that, it will also give us a few techniques of how to forgive and forget as well. And this explanation is common for forgiving others as well as forgetting unpleasant happenings of the past. Okay, what is a fundamental change that is supposed to happen when, say, we become spiritual? Instead of reacting to a situation with sadness, happiness, anger or irritation alone, we are supposed to think deeper and inquire into the happenings themselves. The very word spiritual suggests that, isn't it? You don't look at the happening superficially, but you try to go to the spirit of it. So the more we go spiritually, the more we must inquire. What is that inquiry we must do? Swami always says that this world is a perfect world of reflection, resound and reaction. Whatever we do will in some way or the other come back to us. In other words, all our lives are governed by what we call the karma system, right? Where the good that we do comes back to us, the bad that we do also comes back to us. The more and more we have faith in this universal justice system, we will automatically have humility in success and balance in pain and suffering. But we should not look at this system as a punishment and reward system as most of us tend to do. We must look at it as a learning and unlearning system. So every unpleasant happening is here to teach us a lesson. Some may be very simple, some very profound. Whatever it is, if we fail to learn, the lesson will repeat itself. Just as you take your exams repeatedly till you clear them to graduate to the next class. Till the lesson is learnt, the events will repeat themselves to teach you the same lesson. So when you have had an unpleasant past with someone, especially a relationship or a colleague whom you've had to work with, first accept that there was a reason why it happened to you. And some past act of yours has brought this unpleasantness into your life. I'm not saying blame yourself. To blame is a different thing. To take responsibility is a different thing altogether. So take responsibility for what happens in your life. That way, you accept the event. You accept it with the wisdom that it had to happen for a reason. Once you accept it, then you will be in a better position to see what is it that I'm supposed to learn from the event. What do we do after the acceptance comes? There's a quote that I read a long time ago, which I don't recall verbatim now, but the essence of it was this. When love alone is the residue of all our actions, we become completely free. Which means, when the day comes when we do all actions only out of love, not out of bitterness, not out of fear, not out of ego, desire, desperation, or any such emotion, but purely out of love, we are freed from the shackles of karma. So that is the endeavor we all are at, right? It is very easy to love a lovable person. The challenge is in trying to feel genuine love even for the worst person we come across. And I believe we are all somewhere in between in this journey, and we must try constantly to see how much our love is independent of the goodness or the nature of the person before us. When one student once asked Swami, "How do I know if I am moving closer to Swami or not?" Swami replied, "If every day you are able to love more people than you loved the previous day, then you are moving close to me." In life, has its way of slowly testing us with tougher situations and more difficult characters. After we learn to show love even in such difficult situations, we are ready to graduate. If you want me to put it practically, if a situation is repeating itself or you are having to restart a relationship which has gone wrong, how can we expect a different result if we continue to respond the same way and do the same things? After having accepted the situation, as I mentioned before, try to approach the situation or person differently. Deal with the situation with more patience, more understanding, and more love than you did before. That is really the way forward. Once we develop this attitude to be a student of life, we will look at all situations that comes to our life as lessons. And as Swami would say, difficulties are our true friend, because difficulties take us closer to our goal. But when I say difficulties, I don't mean more pain, just more challenges. And as I explained till now, one way to bring in the acceptance of the situation before, one way is to bring acceptance of the situation before we act on it. There is one more way we can handle unpleasant situations and encounters of the past. And this method is especially for devotees. See, when we claim to be devotees of Swami, we must remember that devotion consists of two aspects. One is love, of course, and the other is faith. Faith is the strong conviction that whatever happens in my life is happening only after the approval of Swami. I generally do this, you know, we must imagine Swami being literally like a guard or a watchman at the doorstep of our life and deciding who comes into it, what worry, pain or happiness is allowed to enter our life. Imagine Swami to be that guard or a watchman at our door. If someone has troubled you in the past, tell yourself, that person could not have troubled me if Swami had not permitted him to or her to. See, maybe it is difficult to show love to each diverse person we come across in life, but through devotion we can achieve the same. Through loving Swami alone we can achieve the same. When you love Swami, you have to accept everything that He sends to us as prasadam, right? If we take on life this way, especially our past, it will be easier to accept it. Our bitterness towards any person who has troubled us will be lesser than before. We can then deal with it the way I mentioned. This was the main question that the listener had asked us. There was, of course, a second part too, but before I get to that, I will summarize this part. To be able to deal with the person in the present when there is a certain unpleasant past related to the person, or to forget a past unpleasant event and to move on in life. First and foremost, you must be able to accept things as they are without battling with it. There are two approaches that can be used. Understand that nothing happens as an accident or nothing unfair ever happens. What we need for our spiritual progress alone comes to us. What we have done comes back to us. When you have complete belief in this idea, you will have the maturity to accept the situation. You will take responsibility for what happens. This will give you the balance to do what has to be done, right? Events always come to us with a message, a lesson we must learn. So try to find out what that lesson is. It could be that you are too stubborn, or you expect people to respond and place too much of your happiness on that, or you get too emotionally attached to people, or simply you don't have the patience. Once you identify this, work on that problem. And the second thing is, in general, we all are trying to learn to love unconditionally. Remember that. Take your encounter with difficult people or encounters that have become difficult because of some past problems as new challenging situations where you must still show love. One last thing in this regard, the more you purify your thoughts, words and actions, the more you grow in devotion. The more you grow in devotion too, it will be easier to let go of your past. As you grow spiritually, you will find that your ability to forget and forgive becomes so much more easier. Now to the next part, the question was, when we are sure what is right and when we tell the person involved, and if they don't listen or agree, what should we do? Should we leave them to their destiny? And it is difficult to do so when it is our own kith and kin, right? So, okay, let's say I listened to a discourse this morning. There's something that Swami says, which I tell myself, I have to follow this from tomorrow. How easy is it to really follow it? How many times we make resolutions, but struggle to stick to them? How many times we know what is right, but we still struggle to do it? When it is so difficult for us to change ourselves, correct ourselves, how much more difficult it should be to correct or change another person? It takes, say, 10 units of patience to correct something in me. Then it will take 100 units of patience to correct the same thing in another person. So when you advise another person, yes, you must wish for the person's welfare. But whether that person changes his or her ways or accepts your counsel is not your responsibility. Consider this. Swami kept telling us for years and decades what is right and what is wrong. He employed every technique possible. He said lovingly, he told us sternly. He even threatened us by telling us that, you know, what would happen if we don't correct ourselves and follow him. But yet, not all that were fortunate to be counseled by Swami transformed completely. No, not all of us. We can learn this important lesson from Swami. Swami never reduced the intensity with which he would correct us or even give up completely on us. We must also do the same. Our duty is to ensure that our side of the equation is perfect. Is my advice coming purely out of concern for the other person? Have I been able to remove completely my ego when I am advising or correcting the other person? Can I work on my patience and selflessness? As a parent, your duty is to correct your children. But the success of your effort is not necessarily defined by the response of your children. This is something which is very important we all must keep in mind. So don't give up on your effort thinking it's that person's fate. Keep trying your best and keep trying different ways and try to your satisfaction. If there is a restlessness in you, I would say that it is an indication that you must still try. Remember that all these relationships of kith and kin are associations made midstream. Each of us come with our own baggage of karmas and tendencies. So let's say a person is doing something wrong and you with all sincerity are trying to correct that person. It means that person is being given an opportunity to make a choice towards doing the right. So you may try as much as you wish. The choice has to be made by that person. And that depends on the luggage that he or she is carrying and that person's drive to do what is right. From your point of view, it is an opportunity for you to play the role and fulfill your dharma. And you have to do it with all your sincerity, patience and perseverance. And even as you try, you must keep in mind that the result is not because of you. Otherwise, if that person does listen to you, you will have the feeling that I have transformed that person. Or the feeling that I have failed when that person doesn't transform. At the end of the day, the only question that you must pose yourself is, did I try my best or not? If in all sincerity, the answer from within for that question is yes, then you are good. So that's the answer I thought for the question that Sister Purna, you asked the answering booth. If you have anything more to ask or if you need any clarifications, do write to us. The next question is from closer home. It's from a listener from Bangalore. She has requested that we not mention her name, and so we shall not. Our volunteer Sister Sumna has read out the question for us. So let us listen to the question first, then we will answer her query.
Sai Ram, I'm a Balvikas guru in Bangalore for the past 7 years. And earlier I was a Balvikas guru at Noida for 15 years. My husband was the youth wing coordinator at Noida and was a very, very staunch devotee of Bhagwan and has throughout his life followed Swami's principles and teachings. He was teaching a number of children Rudram and doing lots and lots of Swami's activities. Suddenly, on 9th April 2016, he passed away. Without any prior indication, even though we went for a master checkup where everything was normal. His sudden passing away has shattered mine and my son's lives. Many say Swami is preparing Prem Sai's army and so on. Please do guide as to why Swami suddenly took him away without any prior guidelines or help. I cannot say that I am still grieving because I have, with the help of a number of friends from Puttaparthi, become stable. Still, sometimes I do question myself as to why Swami did this when we have been sincerely doing only Swami's activities throughout our lives and nothing else other than this.
Thank you for writing to me and my deep condolences, and I pray Swami gives you and your son the courage to overcome the spirit of grief. As I once heard in a speech, life's a dream, no doubt, but even in a dream, when being hit by a hammer will hurt in the dream. So however much we speak philosophy, the moment of grief at that time is real, or at least it appears so, so we cannot completely deny it. All that we learn through spirituality is like, you know, they say doing waterproofing for our roof. It has to be done when there is sunshine, but its worth will be seen during the rainy season. So all that we learn through our sadhana is tested when a shocking or disastrous event happens in our life. See, when a tragedy happens in life, most of us are first shocked and pained. That is our first reaction. After that comes the period of thinking, when we slowly start calming down. How stable we are at the moment of grief and how quickly the grief subsides and the period of thinking begins is defined by our spiritual maturity. And all that I will be saying here and what you ask for as an explanation will help you in this period of thinking that follows the initial shock. There are a lot of people whose thinking gets skewed or they get misguided after facing a pain like this. But if we are able to get the right inputs at that time when we are thinking and trying to understand why certain events happened, we will get to grow from the disaster or the misfortune that we have faced. See, the first and foremost thing we must understand is that we all are like pilgrims, you know, each one of us making our own pilgrimage. We happen to travel with a few people during different points in the course of this journey. And we call each other mine, my husband, my child, my wife, my mother, my father. These are claims that we make in the course of this very, very short encounter that we make in this journey, which is lasting over many lifetimes, right? The truth is that we all have lived multiple lifetimes and we have had made and we've made multitudes of associations like this. None of it was ever permanent. Swami would say, a man loses his wife and goes on crying and crying over it. A sadhu comes to that village and sees this man in this deplorable state and asks him, why are you crying? The man says, Master, my wife died. Then the sage asks, so why are you grieving? What is the cause of your grief? He says, her death is the cause of my grief. Then the sage tells him, see, if death is the cause, every other month someone or the other keeps dying in your village. Do you get depressed every time? And the grieving man replies, why would I cry over everyone's death? This is my wife and that is why I'm crying. So the wise man replies, ah, so the death is not the cause of your grief, but this feeling of mine or attachment is the cause of the grief. The moment we get attached to anyone with this feeling of mine, my father, my mother, my husband, we are creating an opportunity for grief. And when that person dies, ask yourself, are we actually crying for that person? No, actually it's not for that person. We are crying for our own selves. Because we are the ones who are bereaved, who have lost something in life. And when that person whom we have lost is a very noble person, like your husband, the pain is even more. Now, after this period of grief has passed, as I explained, when you think of your husband's passing away, ask yourself, how fortunate he is to lead a healthy and pain-free life till the very end, to pass away peacefully and to have had the opportunity to serve Swami till the end. When we love someone very much, we will want the best to happen to that person, right? So when you look at the turn of events, you will know that your husband has had a blessing of sorts and you will feel happy for him. Yes, there will be personal grief, and that is born out of the vacuum that has been created, but you will also be happy for him at the same time. As I mentioned, we have gone through countless births and made countless associations, which means we have experienced this pain of losing a loved one so many, many times, isn't it? So if pain is born with attachment, And as I mentioned in that story, and we have had so many people whom we have been attached to over many lifetimes and would have seen their passing away. How is it that we don't grieve for all that loss now? It's an absurd question because we have no memory of all those relations and events, right? So even that attachment is time bound. But because we forget this fact that we have gone through this experience over and over again, we grieve every time like it is the first and the worst disaster ever. This relationship between us and our dear ones may be like people meeting in a journey and traveling together for a short while, as I mentioned before. But what is our relationship with Swami? Once Swami had called a few boys for an interview. And inside the interview room, Swami looked at one of the boys and asked him, "Do you think that you have come to me just like that? Janma janmala bandham kadu. Janma 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 janmantara bandhamu." Wow, you know, meaning you have not got this opportunity to come to me just like that. It is not even out of punyas of one or two births. This is a bond of innumerable births. And that is our relationship with Swami. When you say your husband was immersed in Swami's work, lived by Swami's principle, doesn't that mean that the bond between him and Swami transcends birth and death? Your association with your husband is limited to this birth, but not Swami's. And hence, your worry, concern, and what you wish good for him is also likely to be limited to what you can see in this lifetime. In fact, only between the time you became his wife to his death, not even an entire lifetime. But when Swami thinks of his concern and his welfare, Swami is thinking of that soul and its journey which spans many, many lifetimes. There is no way that we can understand Swami's ways through our limited minds. That is why faith plays a very important role. You trust Swami even when you cannot perceive with your own eyes the good that he does. I remember once an old student was sharing this little episode with all of us. Swami was not talking to him for a few days and he got so upset that he stopped having his food. He went without food for 3 days and he thought that Swami will be moved and, you know, would eventually come and console him. And when that didn't happen, this boy got even more angry and upset with Swami. He was thinking he will not start the conversation himself with Swami. Swami should himself come and ask, "Bangaru, why are you not eating?" But that didn't happen for a few days and this boy lost his patience. One day when Swami was speaking to a few students, this boy got up and told Swami, "Swami, you say that you have the love of 1,000 mothers? I have not had food for days. Had it been my mother, she would be crying now and begging me to eat or feeding me with her own hands. But you seem to be least bothered." And this is what this boy asked, and that was quite an audacious thing to say, isn't it? But Swami's reply was very, very profound and something we must always keep in mind. Swami replied in one sentence, "I am not your body's mother." Is Swami concerned about us? Yes. Is Swami doing what is good for us? Yes. Is Swami taking care of us? Yes. But when we say, "me or my family," we are thinking, "I am the body." But when Swami looks at us, he knows very well that we are not the body. Yes, the body is important, but its importance is limited. And Swami will give us as much importance to the body, health and life as it is necessary. Now, being here in Patti, I have personally met a number of people who have been cured by Swami of some disease or the other, who have been saved from some accidents, students whose parents were protected from danger. But the fact is, there are as many people, if not more, and I'm sure it's more, who have faced mishaps or unpleasantness in their life. In fact, I have seen some devotees who were cured by Swami and who maybe passed away after a while. We see it as Swami's protecting them only when he saves their life. But the fact is, Swami for some reason is just giving them an extension of life, and we have no idea why Swami does that in only a few cases. Swami's ways are inscrutable, but whatever Swami does, he has our higher welfare in mind. It is people like us speakers like us, I would say, who simplify Swami's grace to mean just cures and miraculous saves. Once again, I say, life is important. Good health is a great blessing. There is no doubt about that at all. But all of this is a means for a higher purpose. And when we offer our devotion to Swami, what He blesses us with is beyond the physical and the temporal. We sing a bhajan, right? Iha para sukhadayaka. It means He who gives happiness in this world and beyond. One more thing you must keep in mind, just as your husband has a strong bond with Swami that transcends birth and death, just as Swami was guiding the welfare of not just his life, but journey of lifetimes, so is the case with you. Your bond with Swami is also stronger and deeper than the one you share with your husband or son or any other person in your life. Just as Swami was doing what was best for him, so is Swami doing what is best for you. In our thinking, it is very difficult to explain how a wife losing one's husband all of a sudden can be good for her. But within the eventualities of life, which are inescapable like death, Swami does what is best for each of our progress. So there is a reason. Sometimes Swami lets us see the reason. Other times, when it is hidden from our eyes, our faith should lead us to believe that there is definitely a reason. The last thing I would like to say is this. When we do Swami's work, when we follow Swami's words, when we dedicate our lives to Swami's mission, it is a great blessing that Swami has given us. The population of the world today is over 7 billion. How many of them are aware of the avatar? How many get to sanctify their lives by doing some work in His name? Countless number of lives end every day. But how many of those lives were given an opportunity to grow higher when alive? Never ever forget that we doing work in the Sai organization or in His ashram, or we being able to hear or read His message, is an act of grace on us. As Swami would say, I have nothing to gain or lose by you following me. I say all this purely for your good. That's what Swami would say, right? But the fact is, somewhere all of us entertain this idea that I am doing Swami's work and thereby contributing to Swami. Let us remind ourselves every day, this is an opportunity bestowed on us. It is not even that we deserve it. It is a bounty, a jackpot. All of us who are involved in Swami's activities must keep reminding ourselves of this. So in summary, all I would like to say is this. Our relationship with those in our life is very limited, but the relationship with Swami is beyond this event called death. We know very little about it in our conscious minds, and so we fear it. But it may not be so awful after all, and Swami is guiding that complete journey of each of us, which spans many, many lifetimes. Why is it that we don't fear sleep, though it is said that sleep is a form of short death? It is because we sleep and wake up multiple times during life, right? Similarly, in this journey of the soul, death is just like a night's sleep. Every life is like a new day. And Swami is guiding the soul, and He cares for the body as much as it is necessary, and not one bit more. Just as Swami is doing what is good for your husband, so is He doing what is good for you and your son. It is difficult for us to understand completely why such a mishap can be good for us. But what we need is that faith, the faith which allows us to believe that there is a reason even when we don't see it. Swami would say, when you travel in an aeroplane, you don't see the pilot, but you know that he is there, right? And in that faith, you sleep peacefully. Similarly in life too, sometimes Swami and His grace is hidden from our view, but we must believe that it is there. For it really is there. Finally, never give place for this thought that we are doing a favor for Swami by doing His work or obeying His command. This opportunity to know Him is a blessing given to us, an opportunity to sanctify our lives. Swami does not need our efforts. But I'm sure you know that as well as I do. When in grief, we all tend to think this way. Swami would say, even devotees like Tyagaraja and Ramdas have sung songs scolding God when in pain. But what makes them great is that is only a momentary emotion. Similarly, we all too can gather ourselves as the grief fades away. And when grief fades away, we will see more clearly Swami's grace and blessings. Thank you for writing to the show. If there is any clarification about anything I said, feel free to write to me again. Dear listeners, it's time to wrap up the show. Thank you for joining me this morning, and thanks to the two listeners who sent us the questions for this week. If you have a question on practical spirituality, you can send it directly to me. My mailing address is prem@radiosai.org. That's P-R-E-M @radiosai.org. That's my personal ID, and I alone will be reading the mails that you send to this ID. I'd really appreciate it if you can record your questions and send it across. Or if you wish to remain anonymous and don't want your name to be read out, do let me know. We can do that. I humbly offer this show at Swami's Lotus Feet. I'll meet you all at 12:30 for the afternoon satsang. But I will meet you all at 11 a.m. next Thursday for the next episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth.